Welcome in, everyone, to the 60th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. As always, we are your hosts, Colin and Toby. Toby, how are you doing?
Pretty fantastic. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm a little bit jealous because Toby here is a teacher and he's almost done for the summer. We're in the middle of the off season now, and we're actually going to start a new series today. It is going to be 8 weeks long, and it is going to be a deep dive into each division. So what we're going to do, starting today with the AFC East, we're going to talk through all of the assets on all of these teams. So obviously we're going to talk today about the Patriots, the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins. And what we're going to do, we're going to talk about a little bit of how we see that offense playing out this year. And then in general, also for certain assets on those teams, how we value them in Dynasty and how we think the rest of their career trajectory will go. So we're just basically going to get into our takes on a ton of players over these next 8 weeks. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you left us a review. It definitely helps us out a lot. Toby, let's get started. Let's start with the division winner of the AFC East, the Buffalo Bills.
Not the New England Patriots.
Yeah. For like the first time in what, 15 years it feels
pretty
like?
Pretty nuts.
So the Buffalo Bills. Let's start at the top. We're going to talk about coaches for each of these teams. And with the Bills, hasn't changed. You've still got head coach Sean McDermott, and you still have the offensive coordinator of Brian Daboll. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know. Either way, it's the same guys. You know this is going to be an efficient offense. I actually do think their defense might be a little bit better, but they have a solid O-line, solid personnel, good weapons. Not a ton has changed when we're talking about these Buffalo Bills. Obviously, at the top, we've got Josh Allen, the emergence of the 2020 season. We all saw what he did. He ended up as the QB1 in fantasy, and I guess the question then becomes, if you're a very early startup draft or you're looking for trading for this guy, do you value him right at the top? Obviously, last week in our mock draft, we did end up taking Kyler over him. I think I would go Josh Allen over Kyler, but they're right there in those top two, three quarterbacks and really early in startup super flex picks.
I think he deserves to be mentioned as, if not the one, the one or the two. In terms of,
I'd still go Mahomes, I think, over everyone. I feel like I'm much more safe with Mahomes. But after that, it opens up to Josh Allen could easily be the number two for me.
Yeah.
Short term, obviously, he's going to provide insanely a good ton of rushing value. Like in redraft, he's going to be, I would guess, the first or second guy off the board, maybe the third. And looking a lot deeper into his career, because these players like a Josh Allen, you'll see it with Cam Newton or any of these other elite rushers, they lose their legs a little bit, but they keep their arms and they can extend those seasons for years and years and years. Obviously, we have a few guys like Tom Brady or Drew Brees who have been able to maintain that ability into their 40s. And what Josh Allen showed with his arm last year definitely makes me really excited for his long-term future.
Absolutely. I think, you know, worst comes to worst, he becomes like a Ben Roethlisberger, relatively immobile guy.
Yeah, I could see that
happening. And can still be slinging it.
And behind him, you still have Jake Fromm, who was their, I believe, sixth round pick last year, but he is now even behind the stud himself,
the Mitchell man,
Trubisky. So Mitchell Trubisky is on an insanely cheap contract, and that is the one thing that is a bit interesting, because I don't think, for example, he is much worse than Andy Dalton, who at one time was his clear replacement, and Andy Dalton went out and made a ton of money. Whereas Mitch Trubisky made 1 year.
$2.5 million.
$2.5 million is nothing for a quarterback. That's about as,
for an NFL quarterback. Yeah,
it's about as minimum as he could possibly take to be a backup. I assume it's because he wants to be a part of an offense that, you know, could turn his career around. But it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence that he'll ever be able to turn this around. I don't think many people look at Trubisky as someone who has long-term value. The question would be, if Josh Allen goes down, do you think Trubisky has good value if he steps into this offense this year?
I do not think so. I think he's going to step in the offense. He'd be just fine. You know, he could even take the team to 2-2 in a four-game stretch. But people will watch Trubisky, especially the comparison will be apparent between him and Allen. And they'll say, well, he is a backup, because he quite literally is a backup now. Yeah. And I don't think he is long for the NFL world.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, he becomes startable in Superflex, but he's still just what he was last year.
He's startable, but you're just slotting a guy in. And Mitchell Trubisky has had enough chances, in my personal opinion.
I definitely agree. At wide receiver, you've got Stephon Diggs. He's emerged last year. Yep. You know he's one of the first wide receivers that's going to go off the board. I don't think we're going to have any hot takes here. He's definitely a great receiver. You know he's got a bunch more years in the NFL because he's not too old yet. I don't think we need to spend too much time on him. He's a great receiver on a great offense. Number two, I think, is still how you would have to project it this year. He is definitely aging, but Cole Beasley out of the slot is in a position where you expect him to get a ton of targets the same way he did last year. What do you think about Cole Beasley as someone to acquire just for that like short-term flex option?
I think it's a great plan if you want that short-term flex. And he catches a ton of balls. Mm-hmm. And this guy can catch balls for a lot of money too. I struggle to say he's going to be, you know, a really dominant two, just because I think Gabriel Davis is a little too good, and they did go out and acquire Emmanuel Sanders, who I don't think he's irrelevant. I've heard some people say he's irrelevant. He's not going to be irrelevant. Like, he's going to take some touches away from Beasley, but he's an extremely safe slot receiver bet.
Yeah. Those other two wide receivers, you already mentioned them. Gabriel Davis is the somewhat emerging talent. You saw it in the playoffs and down the stretch. He definitely is going to make some big plays. I would project, though, he's most likely going to be the number four as he was last year, because I think that at least for the short term,
Sanders
is going to take over what you saw of John Brown. And maybe even if it's a bit less, maybe it's more of a split, but I don't quite see the emergence of Gabriel Davis like some people seem to beyond this year, where I think Beasley could easily be gone, Sanders could easily be gone. Then I'm much more excited for the potential of that could be the time when Gabe Davis could really step up. Two other wide receivers we're going to touch on. These are more depth guys. One I just don't want everyone to forget about. Isaiah Hodgins looked about as good as Gabe Davis did to me coming out last year, and he missed the entire year with injury. So I just don't want you to forget his name. And then Marquez Stevenson, he profiles as more of that speedy slot guy. He was, I believe, a sixth round pick for them this year, so nothing too crazy in terms of capital. But again, if a Cole Beasley type player is gone in the future, there's potential that he could find that slot role. So when we're always talking about these super late picks of who you can take a shot on, I don't think he's a bad shot for someone to throw in a taxi squad.
The running back situation in Buffalo, to me, is incredibly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You got three names: Zach Moss, Devin Singletary, and Matt Breida. Zach Moss was a bit of a my guy, okay, for me. I really liked Zach Moss' profile. I liked what he could bring to the team. I was really interested to see what he did, and he did not live up to expectations. All sorts of metrics talking about running backs who do not break out in their first year just aren't going to be fantastic assets. So with Zach Moss, you know, I am worried. I am concerned. But the Bills had that chance to get Travis Etienne, and they did not, because they do have a really well-balanced running back room, albeit one that isn't incredibly talented. You have Zach Moss as your guy who's going to run for those really short yardage situations between the tackles, and Singletary's going to be that scat back. While this offense is well balanced in the running back room, I am concerned about any of these guys having a ton of long-term value.
I agree.
It's not that they're in this crazy committee split, but it's that none of them are going to be talented enough alone to break out, let alone have a crazy bell cow season. And because of that, they're going to need to be extraordinarily and improbably efficient.
Yeah, they're good depth and they're in a good offense, so they have a lot. But as you were saying, you know, the Bills didn't go after a high-end running back. I think they're too smart of a front office to ever do that in the first round. And by the second round, your big three were gone, and there's no way they were taking the big leap down. So I still expect that they do want an upgrade of the position. I don't think they're satisfied with what they got last year. But going forward, I think they're fine using this split. And then with Matt Breida, I think we needed to talk about him as the addition. He's making less than $1 million for 1 year, so they didn't commit a lot to him. I definitely am not going to project him to be that relevant, but I don't want to completely ignore the possibility, because there is a lot of those times where you think, oh, a Miles Gaskin, he's just depth, he's nothing. You know, there's a chance he could be the guy. I just definitely don't expect it. Maybe he's worth a roster spot if you're in any sort of deeper league. Then at tight end, the last two players we'll talk about from the Bills, you have Dawson Knox, who started to emerge last year, and they brought in Jacob Hollister. This isn't an offense that uses tight ends a lot. They haven't for a good amount of years, but I'm okay with taking shots on either of these guys, and Hollister much more in deeper leagues. Knox has a little bit more upside, but I found his second year a bit disappointing. I hope he continues to emerge, but I'm not super confident in him. The one thing I will say, though, is I'm pretty sure you can get these two guys really cheap.
Incredibly cheap.
There is definitely some upside because...
Hollister even cheaper than Knox, I would say.
Hollister incredibly cheap. Yeah. He's pretty much free. I know he's on some waivers of mine in leagues, so you can grab him for $0. Whereas Knox, I think he's probably rostered in almost every league, but he's just definitely not too hyped up. Let's go to the second place in 2020 from the AFC East. It was also not the New England Patriots. It was the Miami Dolphins.
Head coach, Brian Flores.
Mm-hmm. That's the same. He is very much a defensive guy, though. And they did have their OC retire last year. And replacing them is the very uncommon combo of two offensive coordinators, George Godsey and Eric Studsville. This is one of the areas of this episode I really had to research. And what is so frustrating is this front offense, including these coaches themselves, I was listening to interviews, they are so tight-lipped about the offense they're going to run. It's impossible to get any information right now. They were asked questions like, you know, what type of offense do you want to be running? Just thinking of, you know, like, are they trying to spread the offense or whatever? They were like, you know, we just want to do whatever we can get to get a lot of yards and score a lot of points and help out our defense. Like, oh, helpful, thank you. So we don't know.
How I interpret it really was they're protecting Tua's interests as best as possible, as in they're revealing just zero information.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but it's odd.
Mm-hmm. The only things I would say I took away from all of that is that they wanted to bring in some speed, but that is obvious considering they brought in Jaylen Waddle and Will Fuller. And then also, they talked about getting the tight ends involved in the passing offense, but with Gesicki, I also think that's kind of a given. So we didn't really learn much at all.
No, not at all.
You've got Tua Tagovailoa. I would say at this point he's quite undervalued in Dynasty. They did surround him with very solid weapons. I think Jaylen Waddle playing out of the slot, as well as a fairly elite speedster, Will Fuller, who can get up over some players and make some contested catches. Tua is in a position where if you look across the league and think of people that could potentially make that big jump, Tua feels like the type of guy who could. He did have a disappointing year last year, but I would be willing to buy him right now because I just think comparatively, he's a bit undervalued. The potential is still quite high. And there's also a possibility that he was still feeling effects from his injury. And that's why I think he could have had a more mediocre rookie season than everyone expected. How do you view Tua in Dynasty?
Tua in Dynasty, I do believe, is underrated. But I think that his ceiling for me is a lot lower than I originally anticipated it to be. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just because I haven't seen him at his peak. I haven't seen him at his best. But this season, I think, will be really telling for what and who he is. And if you're a believer in Tua, I think you got to get him before this season.
Yeah, it could become like a Drew Lock situation where he continues to disappoint. Okay. And at this point, you're like, he's not really anything special. But it also could be the other way where he really steps up past expectations. Because I think the offense and the weapons around him, he could just be that simple distributor of the ball. And he could have, in my opinion, probably a season that mirrors Justin Herbert's last year, where he wasn't necessarily running like crazy. He was just distributing the ball well and had good weapons to make some plays. I'm not saying that I wouldn't take Herbert way over him at this point. But
I would take Herbert way over him. But as would everyone.
Yeah. I just think that's the type of season he can have. He has more upside than I think is currently baked into his ADP. Interestingly, they also brought in a, in my opinion, pretty solid backup, Jacoby Brissett. And if you're not a believer in Tua, because I know those guys are out there, I think Brissett is the right type of backup quarterback to be targeting. Mm-hmm. He has that rushing floor. If Tua really falters and he steps into that offense, I think he can at least be competent. I'm just not super excited about the long-term benefits of a Jacoby Brissett. I don't think that he is going to stay as a starter in the league. But if you're in a deeper league and every starting quarterback is really important, you have to recognize with any of these backups that upside of halfway through the year, Tua is either hurt or underperforming and you can get a starter is super valuable. So I think he's probably a good add for the bottom of your bench right now.
I would agree.
So wide receivers, I think there's a very obvious three. You've got Devontae Parker. He's been the de facto one for the last few years. I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes their wide receiver three this year. He's a jump ball specialist. He doesn't get that much separation, but he's a very solid receiver, and I think they've got a good trio now, which is something I'm so excited about with this offense. We pretty much know what we have in Devontae Parker, though. Because he's had so little competition the last few years, it's hard to rely on him getting nearly as much of a target share as he's had.
No, he will not replicate his season that he had 2 years ago, ever in his career. I'm willing to go on record.
I would definitely agree. Will Fuller was also brought in free agency.
He's definitely going to hamstrings Fuller.
Sure. Will Fuller came into the Miami Dolphins with a one-year, $10.6 million contract. So that's more than four Mitch Trubisky's worth. So he is going to be suspended for, I believe, the first two games of the season. But beyond that, all he did last year was show that if he stays healthy, he can be a very good fantasy asset. And I think although his ceiling is not nearly as high in this offense because he doesn't have Deshaun Watson throwing him the ball anymore, and I also would say his competition is a little bit greater than it was, he can still totally be a valuable dynasty asset. And also, in fact, he's on that one-year contract. He just needs to show out for 1 year, and I do think he'll get a fairly big contract somewhere. So he's the type of boom or bust asset that could really pay dividends if you buy him now. I think probably now is about the cheapest you're going to get him, unless he gets injured. If he gets injured, though, you're taking a huge L, most likely, because I don't think he will get that big contract.
Not even if, it's when he gets injured. Like, he's going to get injured even minorly at some point in the year.
He could. I don't look at injuries as much that way. He is one of the most injury-prone players in the league, and I just consider injuries so random that, yes, his injury risk is higher than other players, but I don't think it's by as much as everyone expects.
Okay.
Jaylen Waddle.
Such an exciting prospect.
Sixth overall. Most people would say reached on him, but hey, a lot of other people had him super high up there. I don't know if you saw this, but the Jags had their draft grades on all the players leaked, and the two players at the top of their board were Trevor Lawrence and Jaylen Waddle. So this isn't a guy who only one team was highly regarding. He has injuries as well. You could view him in the same way you view Will Fuller, but he is very dynamic. He has a perfect passer rating when targeted in all of college playing out of the slot, and that's what I expect
that's
him to
a
play.
Pretty good perfect is.
It is, yeah. I don't mind perfection. So he's incredibly fast. He's going to be dynamic out of the slot. And I think based off what we've seen from Tua so far, that's the profile of the guy that I think really might eat in this offense. So
yes, someone who Tua can get the ball out of his hands quickly, a guy who's in relative space pretty quickly. Yeah.
If I had to pick someone that might just blow away our expectations in year one from this wide receiving class, it's going to be Jaylen Waddle, because I think people expect it out of some others, but while there is risk, there is definitely crazy upside for Waddle. The other wide receivers, been around a little bit. You got Preston Williams. He probably lost his spot. He's another guy with a ton of injuries, and that's really rough, but he, to me, has never been as dynamic of a player as some people view him to be an elite dynasty asset. I think he's a hold at this point if you've got him on your roster, but I would not be incredibly excited. Then Lynn Bowden, who just got a terrible Miami Dolphins tattoo. I don't know if you saw it. It's quite funny. I think he drew it himself. It's a really bad representation of a dolphin.
That's what it said. He drew it himself and then tattooed it on his butt, which is so odd because he's just not going to be on the Dolphins forever, man.
Yeah.
He was barely on the Raiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. He was a third-round pick to the Raiders, but he's kind of that gadgety guy. He could play a little bit of the slot as well, but I really do expect it to be those main three on the field. Then we've got the running backs, and here is a good question, because the offensive coordinator did leave, and one thing that was so attractive about Miami before is that that guy really, really used one running back. And so you could see it in previous years, even when they were leaning on Frank Gore for some reason. Last year, they leaned on Myles Gaskin, the top guy in their group. And if that is how they still run their offense, I do believe Gaskin will be the number one, and he will be a great fantasy asset. We just can't be confident anymore that that's the way they're going to run their offense. They bring in Malcolm Brown for decent backup money. They also still have Salvon Ahmed, who they signed off of, I believe it was a practice squad last year, but he played pretty well in limited opportunity. And then they also draft Jared Doakes in the seventh round, and he's the type of guy you could see coming in for stealing away goal line work, etc. This is a tough backfield to suss out who's going to be really relevant and who's not, but it's a backfield I'm willing to target because the upside, if you hit, is totally worth it, especially in like a redraft scenario. These are the type of backfields you need to target late to really find a boom with your late round picks.
The tight ends of the Miami Dolphins, you got Mike Gesicki, who we all know about. Insane college dominator rating. He's going to make a few one-handed snags that'll make you yell at your TV. And they also drafted Hunter Long.
In the third round.
In the third round, which is decent draft capital, especially considering the tight end position. Do I think Hunter Long's going to cut into Mike Gesicki's work? No, not really. Do I think that having drafted Hunter Long in the third and having now Will Fuller and Jalen Waddle will cut into Gesicki's work? Yes. I view Gesicki as a worse dynasty asset than he was last year.
I would agree with that. My one thought with that whole Gesicki thing, though, is he is also a free agent at the end of this year. It's possible they're looking at Hunter Long as his replacement.
Sure.
Who knows if he's going to get signed or not. It's really impossible to tell at this point. I love Gesicki's profile. If he leaves, that's fine to me.
Yeah.
I'm okay with him on some other team. It could be better. It could be a worse situation. He, I think, just based on pure athleticism and the fact that you know he's a good receiver, is a good guy to target. But I find, as you may have seen in the mock draft episode last week, that if you don't take one of those top-end guys, Gesicki's, I believe, next.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not spending up to where you have to get Gesicki right now. Next, we'll go to the New England Patriots. And unsurprisingly, this is a coaching staff that has not changed. You know, it's been around for long enough now. You've got Bill Belichick, and I don't think you all need us to tell you how Bill Belichick runs an offense. Everyone pretty much knows. And then they've got the perennial next head coach of the future, Josh McDaniels, who is still there. And again, we know the way this offense runs. They spread the ball around both in the running back room and also, especially when Tom Brady was around, to the wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Now Tom Brady is gone, and you've got Cam Newton and Mac Jones. No mention of Jared Stidham allowed. Cam Newton, his arm isn't great anymore. He obviously can still run. I do believe in something like redraft, you can probably get some good games out of him. Before he got COVID last year, he was quite dominant in fantasy, rushing in a ton of touchdowns. But yeah, you can tell his arm is not what it used to be.
Yeah, I think that's even maybe an understatement. When you look at footage of last year, any pass that's traveling more than 20 yards is taking almost maximum effort for him.
He and really was torquing his body.
When you torque and exert your body that much over the course of an entire season that he already did last season, like, of course it's going to take a toll on you.
Yeah.
When is Mac Jones going to play? At what week? If I'm going to guess, Mac Jones plays week 7.
Sure. That's, I would say, if I had to project it, that's probably about how it's going, because I don't think they're going to win a ton of games. It's basically going to come down to their record. They would definitely need to rely on their defense. I don't think this will be an efficient offense with Cam Newton, but projecting how the weapons will do based off of which of these quarterbacks is on the field is really difficult.
Yeah.
Their wide receivers, they brought in Nelson Agholor, who was behind Kenny Golladay, the highest paid wide receiver in this year's free agency. And on the same day, very early in free agency, they signed Kendrick Bourne to way more than I expected him to get.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Kendrick Bourne, at this point, you got no more Edelman, kind of looks like he's going to be the slot receiver. So you've got Nelson Agholor. We know what he does. He burns up the outside and he's good at contested catches. And then you've got Kendrick Bourne, kind of that slot guy who, at best, at the absolute ceiling, could become like a Cole Beasley if he's just eating up targets. But you definitely don't project that. Beyond those two, you've got Jacoby Myers. We saw what he did last year. He was the de facto wide receiver one. He was okay. And someone that somehow wasn't the de facto wide receiver one, you've got N'Keal Harry still hanging around being a big old bust. And then also a very late round pick, someone to keep an eye on. If you're, again, looking to take these late shots on rookies, this is about as bad of a wide receiver room as you can find. So you might as well take a shot on Trey Mixon, who I believe was a 7th round pick to the New England Patriots. He's just a guy. He's not that special to me. He's mostly a burner. He's, think of Dyami Brown, but worse. It's like the profile of him. But sure, you can take a shot on him. I don't mind it at all.
I also think because of the lack of depth and quality of this wide receiver room, Nelson Agholor actually stands out to me.
I agree.
I really like him. They signed him for big money.
Uh-huh.
His performance of last season kind of blew me away. Like, I feel like he obviously broke expectations in terms of last season.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be too surprised if he does it this season. with Cam Newton or with Mac Jones. Obviously, Mac Jones is going to be better.
Yeah, for these wide receivers, I'd much rather Mac Jones get in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Aguilar just seems like the obvious number one to me.
He's too obvious for me not to be... He's not my dynasty buy of the week, but he's not a bad one because he hasn't done anything yet. And you're looking at this wide receiver room and, you know, it's pretty easy to make a mockery of it a little bit. But he's going to be a number one guy for a team that, you know, isn't a Brady spread the ball on paper.
If I had to really put my money on it, though, the players that are going to get the highest number of receptions we have not talked about yet. Running back, you've got Damian Harris, who definitely seems like the number one at this point.
Yeah.
You still have James White. You know how he's going to operate in this offense. It's going to be the exact same. And I actually think he has less competition out of that backfield. Rex Burkhead is gone now. He just signed with Houston, actually. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that.
Mediocre signing of the week. You've got Ramondre Stevenson was their fourth round pick, and he clearly is not a pass catcher. He's going to be used, hopefully, hopefully LeGarrette Blount type role that we saw a few years ago. You got Sony Michel, who at this point, I don't think is that crazy. I'm not even sure if he'll make it out of camp. The knees died on him, man.
Yeah.
You're a running back. You can see a girly level talent 2 years ago was looking great. Already, he's like 3 months into free agency and can't get signed because no one wants him. That's basically what happened to Sony, except Sony was never that great. Then you got J.J. Taylor, who I think is maybe worth a bench shot, but they did pick up enough guys in front of him that I'm not as excited about him now as I was at one
point. Drafting Ramondre made me really unexcited than J.J. Taylor.
Mm-hmm. I think the clear guy to talk about is how do you value Damian Harris? Because to me, he does clearly look like the guy that's going to get the most work. And as long as the offense isn't atrocious, that could be a pretty valuable depth piece on your team.
I think Damian Harris will get the most work. I can't argue against that.
Mm-hmm.
I think his lack of caught passes will be detrimental to him in terms of he's not going to put up the stats that really excite you. I do agree that he's probably going to get a couple 20-point games next season, and you'll go, whoa, I love it. But I think they're going to spread the ball around the running back room too much. I don't think Damian Harris is going to have a stranglehold at any point on this offense.
I could see it happening, to be honest. It's never going to be an offense where there'll be an absolute bell cow. James White's going to come in for the pass catching downs. And I do think there's a possibility that someone like Stevenson could come in and steal some touchdowns. But it would not shock me if you've got basically a confident type of guy that first and second downs, he's going to be out there every time. Like we already talked about Singletary and Zach Moss. I think Damian Harris is a better version of Zach Moss. They kind of have a similar role in an offense. And at this point, I think that Damian Harris is the better talent, so that's where I would go. But they're definitely in that range of when you need depth in a startup draft, those are kind of your options. The bigger splash that the Patriots made in free agency, first they come out and they sign Jonnu Smith, and I was hyped. I was like, hell yeah, this is what you want. He could be the number one target in that offense. Then a day later, just to ruin the parade, Hunter Henry comes in. They sign to very similar amounts, so it's really hard to project which one of these guys is going to be used more. They're basically making the same. I don't even know which one of those contracts is the better contract. These two guys could be the top two targets on the team, though. You have Jonnu Smith, who is definitely much more of the elite asset. I think he makes bigger, more impressive plays. And then you've got Hunter Henry, who is, I think, much more refined at the position. I believe he's a better blocker, so I expect he'll be on the field a lot more. And I think he's that type of player that is much more reliable, and you know he's going to be doing the right things. Jonnu is a little more prone to mistakes, and if anyone's going to punish you for those, it's Bill Belichick. The problem I have with going for either of these guys in Dynasty right now is I don't know which one it's going to be, or if it's going to be a perfectly even split, and that is not ideal. So this is an impossible offense to project right now. I would go for the upside of a Jonnu Smith just because of athleticism, but it's so difficult. Their ADPs right now are both barely in the top 10. I believe they're the number 9 and number 10 in ADP. So people are just taking that shot, but it's hard to know if you're making the right shot. You just genuinely don't know.
And it's also so bizarre that they have Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene.
Two third-round tight ends drafted
2 years ago.
At this point, throw those guys out the window almost.
But that's I want to, but why did they do it?
Yeah. The crazy thing is, so they were both totally off the board, expected to be late day 3 picks.
Yeah.
And Belichick goes out, two third-round picks. Everyone's like, oh, cray, they're going to play this Gronk Hernandez-type system. That's what they want. They're going to bring these tight ends back to the forefront. They're spending some good capital on them. And I guess those people were right because they wanted two good tight ends, but instead they totally replaced them immediately. So yeah, I don't have expectations at this point for Keane or Asiasi. I don't know how to pronounce that one either, but whatever. I'm just not really excited about those guys. Of course, you're holding them in tight end premium leagues, but
yeah,
I just don't think they're ever seeing the field. The last team we're talking about today, the New York Football Jets.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Head coach is a new boy.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Saleh, you knew that he was going to be head coach somewhere. Yeah,
probably the most sought-after head coach this offseason.
And we're going to see how long it takes for New York City to cool down his fiery spirit.
I actually really like Saleh.
Me too.
I think that he was a great hire, and I think that he can turn around. You know, so many people are locked into, like, a broke franchise is broke forever. That's not necessarily true. Like, you're changing up personnel. Unless you have an owner that is, like, royally screwing you forever or you can't afford to pay players or anything like that, like, believe the possibility that the Jets could really turn this around. You've got Saleh, and along with him, he brings Mike LaFleur. And Mike LaFleur last year was the passing game coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers, where obviously Robert Saleh was the
defensive
coordinator. So basically, I was going into this episode thinking, okay, everyone for some reason expects, you know, Robert Saleh, he came from the Shanahan system, so he's just going to automatically implement that system. And I don't like immediately jumping to that because he was a defensive coordinator. Maybe his philosophy is totally different.
Yeah.
But it is justified because he brought Mike LaFleur over. He was operating that system, and now I've heard them talk about it. And they're going to be wanting to run a million miles an hour. They talked about the running back room in the same way that San Francisco uses that. They talked about spreading the ball. They talked about West Coast offense. Like, they're using the Shanahan system. So you can see exactly the offense they are trying to mirror in the Jets. They obviously also now the biggest addition. They've got Zach Wilson. And Zach Wilson, along with Trevor Lawrence, are the only two rookies that you can immediately insert. And the reason you can do that is because they got rid of Flacco, who was their backup last year. They obviously got rid of Sam Darnold. Their backup right now is James Morgan, who I believe was their seventh round pick last year. Like, they don't have a quarterback that is playing in front of Zach Wilson. He is immediately inserted. I think he can provide some dynasty value right away because he has some legs. He has a rocket arm when he needs it. He is probably going to make some mistakes. I expect, you know, his interception numbers to be high would be my guess. But this definitely is an offense where the recipe could work. And the pieces could come together and this team could turn around fast. I was a little bit surprised actually looking into it that their offensive line was considered the one list I saw like second worst in the league behind the Steelers being the worst. And that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. They took a first round guy last year in Mekhi Becton, who is a absolute stud. Then this year they trade up for Elijah Barrett Tucker. They've got some other pieces that were some good picks. They've definitely got potential that this O-line could be very good. The wide receiver room around him is decent, in my opinion. I don't want to disparage this offense too much. I think the potential is absolutely there, even though, you know, I'm not projecting to have a 10-win season. That would be everything going perfectly. I want to be realistic about the fact that stuff can come together, and if it does, this offense could produce a lot more fantasy points than previous Jets teams have been doing. In the wide receiver room, their second round pick last year, you got Denzel Mims. Toby, what do you think about Denzel Mims a year out from his draft year?
Denzel Mims, I don't think, taught us anything in his first year. Yes, he put up some really impressive metrics when he was on the field for a couple of games. He had some great separation. He's also just crazy injured almost the entire season, and he was on the tail end of the Sam Darnold tailspin.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about him. And I would love to say, oh, just, you know, just throw it off the board. It's completely fine. Like, this is his rookie year. You can't really think like that. But I also can't really think that he's doomed either, because he was actually going out and on a couple of occasions, when in actuality it was the only couple games he played, was looking pretty decent. Where he's able to carve himself out a role is honestly at this point more up to him than anyone else.
Yeah.
If he wants to prove himself to be any form of great dynasty asset, he doesn't have crazy people to beat out. Could he beat out Corey Davis?
Definitely.
I think he should. Could he beat out Jameson Crowder? well, they play very different roles, I would say. Mm-hmm. So that's not really fair, but...
The thing to immediately think about with Mims is you already talked about it earlier. I think we were talking about Zach Moss, and you said that hit rate if the first season goes down the toilet. So and that's rough to look at because Denzel Mims, the path is clearly there. You have Corey Davis, and other than that, it sure looks like Denzel Mims is on the other side of the field, stretching the field.
Yeah. I mean, they did draft Elijah Moore, who is not...
Slot. He's a slot guy.
That's my thing, is that both Jameson Crowder is very much a slot boy.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah Moore very much operates out of the slot. So he should be able to establish himself as a dominant presence, at least in this New York Jets wide receiving room. But will he?
Obviously, you bring in Corey Davis, and he's got 3 years, $37.5 million. I think he
That's
could...
so much money, man.
It is a lot, and he could easily operate as the number one in this offense. He's making over $10 million a year. Like, clearly, they expect him to be involved. At worst, I think you're looking at the role he had as the number two behind A.J. Brown. But Denzel Mims or Elijah Moore, whoever, is not A.J. Brown. So I think he can be relevant in this offense, and... You know, if you are looking at him in the way you were a 49ers offense, there's a lot of value to being that Ayuk type player that I think either Mims or Davis or both could be in that role. Then in the slot, of course, you already mentioned it, you've got Jameson Crowder and the newly drafted Elijah Moore, early second rounder. Here is the very interesting wrinkle about this team. So Jameson Crowder makes $10 million and is one of the most projected cut candidates in the league. Because, yes, he has been very valuable for them out of the slot the last few years, but he is overpaid and they can get out from under this contract this offseason.
And they drafted Elijah Moore.
And save a lot of money. So, yes, the incoming player of Elijah Moore, obviously a lot of people are really expecting that to be a factor in that Jameson Crowder might not be a part of their future plans. I think they would like to have him. He would probably help out Zach Wilson in his arrival in the NFL. But if they're going to save a ton of money... Don't be too shocked if that cut happens, because if it happens, it's very clear who their three wide receivers are to me. And Jameson Crowder, although I still look at him as a somewhat viable slot option that you could flex every once in a while on whatever team he would then go to, he has really benefited from just no competition the last few years. And that just won't be the case whether he stays on the Jets or whether he goes, unless he's on like Houston or the Lions. He's not going to be in as good of a situation he has been the last few years.
Agreed.
Before we just pass over his name, Elijah Moore is someone I'm very excited about. I want him to play out of that slot. I think he's a different player in terms of his size, but looking at San Fran again, that Debo role where you're picking up the shorter passes and your yak ability is what really shines, that's, I believe, what they want out of Elijah Moore in this offense. And so I really think long-term, I'm pretty excited about the landing spot for Elijah Moore. At running back, there's so many names. It's hard
it's
to know what they're going to do.
It's just a swirling cauldron of mystery here. Mm-hmm. So there's four names. Michael Carter, LaMichael Perine, Tevin Coleman, and Ty Johnson.
And if we're looking at this as if they are 100% implementing this San Francisco offense, they're using a committee.
They're just going to use everyone.
And I genuinely think in that type of offense, four guys are probably relevant, and those are going to be the four. So you have to acknowledge the fact that it's pretty unlikely any one of these guys is going to truly emerge, but the upside of all these players, if the offense starts to click, is very high. So obviously you've got Michael Carter. He's got all the hype right now. They picked him in the fourth, which is not great for running back, but the situation is clearly pretty good. Those four names are not guys that you are incredibly scared of missing out on. Then LaMichael Perine and Ty Johnson are guys that I'm, you know, not hyped on. They can both catch the ball. They're both a little undersized, but in this type of offense, it's where they can see their maximum value. If any of those guys had gone to San Fran, I would have been like, oh, okay, that's the perfect landing spot for them. That's exactly what you want. And speaking of San Fran, you got Tevin Coleman, who just left there. Doesn't look that great anymore, but I will say he missed almost all of last year with injury, but he's more depth. I would guess he's the number four there. And reports out of their camp that's going on right now are that on some days I have seen Ty Johnson being the starter, you know, the first guy out in reps. And some days it's been Michael Carter. So Michael Carter, to me, is clearly the guy that if you got to take one, he should be first off the board. But I don't want to ignore the possibility that these other guys are very relevant in this offense.
You also can't ignore it just because of the OC and the head coach coming right over from that system. Like, even though you can say it's a new team, they want to do their own thing. Yes, but I can't ignore that fact that I think it's going to be a committee.
Sure seems like they're going to want to implement this system. At tight end, for the, what, 100th year in a row, it's Chris Herndon's breakout season.
Chris Herndon.
Yeah, I don't think so at this point. It is a new coaching staff, which can only be good. Like, you're sure happy it's not Gase again, but it's very unlikely at this point that he will have any sort of breakout. Another guy I wanted to throw on there, he was an undrafted free agent, so he's probably free on your waiver wire. Kenny Aboah is someone we talked about in our pre-draft episode. He was actually the 48th ranked player, so the last guy we talked about. But Kenny Aboah is a good receiver. He honestly is kind of similar to Chris Herndon. So there is absolute possibility he could come out and be relevant in this offense, especially just because their tight end room is not very deep and not very talented.
No,
so of any tight end that came out in this draft, in my opinion, you've got the best two landing spots are a fifth round pick of Brevin Jordan and an undrafted Kenny Aboah. I think those are the two players, despite their late draft capital, that can easily step into a lot more work.
Kenny Aboah could be thrown into a lot more work with another suspension or injury to Chris Herndon.
Totally possible. Who knows? But yeah, he could very quickly find some work. And for any undrafted tight end, that's really all you're looking for. And he's the type of guy that fills the very bottom of your roster.
Yep.
That's it for this episode of our divisional deep dive series. Of course, we're going to continue it on for the next 7 weeks. But before we close with this episode, as always, Toby's going to hit me with his Dynasty Buy of the Week. If you want to learn all about the rules of how this game works, just look in the description below. Toby, hit me with that first hint.
Hint number one. I finished 28th overall at my position last year, and I'm only 24 years old.
I'm going to go with Curtis Samuel.
Love it? No. In week 16, I had a 33.9 point game last year. 33.9 points I racked up in week 16. In prime time, no less.
I don't think that helps me, but maybe it should if I could remember it was prime time. So somebody that had at least one huge week at the end of the season and is only 24 years old. I think that's the main thing I'm trying to mostly focus on. Everyone I keep thinking about is either too young, because I'm obviously trying to think of young players, and I'm like, nah, he's 22, or I think they all did a little bit better than that, like 27th at the position, despite that huge blow-up.
28th, but yeah, I hear you.
How about, I don't know if this guy's old enough, I feel like he's a little younger than this, but he's a Toby guy, and he could have some blow-up games. I bet he would fit as one of your dynasty, but I think I'm going to go Darnell Mooney.
Love it, and I love Darnell Mooney. I can talk about Darnell Mooney all day, but it is not Darnell Mooney. Third hint. I am poised to be the lead running back of my team. This most recent draft, my team did not address the RB position until a 7th round dart throw.
Okay, so 7th round dart throws. I know Jamar Jefferson got picked in the 7th round. I know Jared Doakes did. My guess is that you are talking about the running back being that whatever funk. And he was drafted to the Rams, and so I'm going to guess, even though I think he's not 24 yet, Cam Akers.
He's not Cam Akers. Last season, I had the 9th highest touches on a per-game basis, because I did not play nearly half the games.
I know Miles Gaskin missed some of the year, but I don't think he ended up as the 28th running back. Fairly obvious pick could be Saquon, but I'm a little... You know, I think he's still incredibly expensive, so I don't know if you'd call him much of a buy, but he's definitely a good option. I know he came back right at the end of the year. Sure, why don't I go with Saquon Barkley?
Your final hint is, I can run for miles and miles without being tackled.
I feel like I'm playing the game within the game, in that I'm thinking there is no way Toby would pick someone that we're already going to talk about in the episode as the dynasty buy, because we're going to talk about him. I guess I've talked about it the whole time. I guess it's Miles Gaskin.
It's Miles Gaskin. It is Miles Gaskin. I apologize retrospectively, because that would have been very confusing if you're assuming it wasn't on in the AFC East.
I was making that assumption, but there was no reason for me to make that assumption.
Here's the case for Miles Gaskin. So, yeah, he finished 28th overall. He's capable of absolutely exploding the team. While there are new coaches, it's almost the way I interpret it is that there was a new coaching staff. They were ready to be there to make their mark, to make this offense what they wanted. They did not touch that running back position till the very seventh round. Miles Gaskin, when he was playing, was fantastic. When he was given all running back responsibilities, he was absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, we only have a 2-game sample size for that, but he was pretty fantastic. He included that 33.9 game. This is that murky backfield that everyone will talk to you about in fantasy, where sometimes the murky backfields are where you can get dynasty value when it counts the most. And when it counts the most is before we recognize that, oh, Miles Gaskin is going to be actually used a ton. And yes, there are some other pieces around him, like Malcolm Brown. How will he be used? I really don't know. But I know that Miles Gaskin is going to have value no matter what. And that is why I want to get him prior to the season beginning.
Okay, here's one, small retort. So the Javonte Williams pick, The Denver Broncos traded up 5 spots because they knew, and it is now leaked and pretty much everyone knows, That Miami was 100% taking Javonte Williams in the second round. So that screams to me, sure, Miles Gaskin could have a year, but they don't see him as their guy. They're not confident if they're willing to take a second round pick and spend it on Javonte Williams. That's a bit of what freaks me out, is that Gaskin looked great last year and this offense could be pretty good, as I was saying in this episode. I'm just a little nervous that if this, coaching staff, if their front office is not committed to him, that, you could take a Mike Davis instead, who will be way cheaper. And it's very possible both of them are just a 1-year rental type.
I think that Miles Gaskin is going to be great this year. I think that if he's as great as I suspect he will be, there won't be a need to go out and then that next year get that second round running back.
That just happened.
But I'm saying, last year he didn't do a whole lot. He came in for a few games and was great. I think this year he will be consistently great. And if he's consistently great, I'm not so sure that they go out and lean for that Javonte.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind it as a buy because I think there's a lot of people selling him, but I would say he's much more appropriately valued to me because I think there's upside. But one, I think there's a possibility that, a Malcolm Brown could genuinely just be the starter and you just are spending your pick on someone that is backup because there's just no commitment at this point to Gaskin. And the fact that their front office was already going out to spend that early second round pick on a running back, that freaks me out in that long term, they might not just commit to him. Because if you're spending, even though he's not crazy expensive, what you have to spend to get a Gaskin right now, it would really suck to only have him for 1 year.
It's scary, but that's why you might be able to get him.
Fair enough. That is the Dynasty Buy of the Week. Thank you again for being here, Toby.
Thank you, sir.
That's the end of this episode, everyone. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty, and we will see you again next Thursday morning. Thanks so much for being here. Have a good one.
Peace.